accessing RTMPBS, listening today to the post-RTMPBS presentation by the Parliamentary Budget Office. Are there any apologies to be noted? Select Committee Finance, apologies? None. You must get a GPS to see where the comedy room is. Yes, the Bobal.
It's the same with Dolanis, I guess, and Mr. Pakis.
Fine, Honorable Pakis is absent.
My name, Honorable McLaughlin, apologize for the whole week. Mr. Bogaza is a doctor's appointment, he will join the meeting a little bit later.
These members that are absent through noted apologies must do it in writing. That is procedure. So let's stick to the procedure. Yes, Honorable Shekima.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to be excused at 12. I've got another meeting to attend.
Well, you have to consult your chairperson as well. But we know that. Thank you, honorable members, for the apologies. A short input from our co-chairs here. Standing Committee of Finance, apologies? None? Wait, what?
Kwan Kwan Shengwa.
Say again?
Honorable Kwan Kwan, Honorable Shengwa.
Fine, there's two apologies, we note that.
And one more. Pinky phoned me now, and I mean the real Pinky, Kekana. She said that she is stuck, you know, she's in the PAP, and they're meeting the AU Commission against the Women on behalf of the Women. Thank you.
That's also an important activity. Any other announcements regarding members' presence? None. I'm going to give the opportunity to our co-chairs to make a short input as well. Honorable Posa and then Honorable Kennedy.
Right. Good morning, Honorable Members. And thank you once more for the opportunity to learn from the TDO this morning on the post 2017 MUTBPS. Well, just a reminder that the MTBTS policy statement is a very important part of South Africa's open and accountable budget process. It empowers Parliament to discuss and shape government's approach to the budget. So the message from the 2017 MTBTS is clear. Let me quote from the MTBTS: unless decisive action is taken to chart a new course, the country could remain caught in a cycle of weak growth, mounting government debt, shrinking budgets, and rising unemployment. We suggest that we need a combination of fiscal measures and economic interventions to grow the economy, address immediate challenges facing the public finances, and reduce long-term risks. So as we are meeting, my wish is we focus on developing concrete proposals on how we can turn around our economy and public finances. So these are my few opening remarks to the meeting.
Thank you. I'd like to add words of welcome and wish everybody well. Thank you very much.
That is short and sweet. Honourable members, we have to applaud the Minister of Finance for giving us the real picture of the finances of South Africa. That's what happened Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock. There was not a sugar story. He gave us the real picture. Now, how are we going to deal with that? How are we going to establish and ignite economic growth and confidence? It's not only the responsibility of the cabinet, it's also the responsibility of us sitting here doing our oversight. Looking back at all the resolutions we took over the past years, let's go back to 2009. Were we effective enough as committees doing that oversight? We must be honest with ourselves as well. I'm just throwing this in, handing over immediately to the Parliamentary Budget Office to take us through their presentation. You have this document in front of you, honourable members. Professor Jayet, over to you and your team. Thank you. And it's the time until 11:15. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, honourable chair, honourable chairs, honourable members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Chair, thank you for the introduction by the three chairs. And I think what you've alluded to is the need for policy debate, the policy discussion to take the economy into, I think, the next phase of development. So the importance of policy debate and discussion at this level is critical. And I think you've highlighted it correctly, Honourable De Beer, that as a committee you need to take us through the process of indicating the direction that we're going to take as an economy. And I think that the MTBPS does provide the context for the 2018 budget. And I think this context is important, and as you correctly said, I think the Minister also correctly spelled out the issues facing the country in a cold, stark manner. It's therefore important that within this context, reform of the government budget process is going to be required. In other words, resource allocation and how it's allocated is going to be a critical point in this regard. What we've noticed, honourable chairs, is we've seen the mandate paper that has come to the fore, which I think provides the overall strategic direction for the budget and for resource allocation. But what we've also seen within this broad context is that there's a continued lack of performance in the economy, especially the key macroeconomic variables that we've indicated. We've seen that debt has continued to increase as a share of GDP. Economic growth rates continue to decline. We continue to see high unemployment, inequality and poverty. I think as you all know in our presentation as well, the work by StatsSA indicates that poverty is actually increasing. So the question now is whether this continued poor growth that we face and this low public expenditure that we've seen will negatively impact on the success of our macro and micro performance intervention. And I think this sets the context, honourable members, for our presentation today, and I hope also to give you some discussion and ideas on how we could take the process forward in the country. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to Siraj to kickstart the presentation. Qualify as the event. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. The first section looks at the macroeconomic situation, and you'll see from the slide that Parliament is to consider and examine in the first bullet point that is explanations and assumptions of macroeconomic and fiscal position. And so that's what we endeavor to do going forward here. Now, as the director of the PBO was saying, South Africa's, we basically put out a quick look at some of the key macroeconomic variables to look at South Africa's macro performance during the fiscal consolidation period, which is 2012-16. And we see that real GDP per capita actually increased from 2012-13, but then declined until 2016 to return close to 2012 levels. So we've seen over that period a decline back to where we were per capita in 2012. Reinvestment part of the solution increased from 2012 to 2013, but I think as the effects of fiscal consolidation kicked in, we saw reinvestment decline back to 2012 levels. Household consumption declined as a percentage of GDP for the period, while gross savings for the country increased. Now, this we explained in our pre-MPBCS discussion that there was a huge buildup of household debt leading up to the crisis, as in many other countries, and as in many other countries, South African households that could afford and had access to credit are now paying it down and reducing their household consumption in line with that. And as household consumption is 60% of GDP, we're feeling the impact in terms of growth and the related revenue collection. In the period since 2008, the South African welfare system reached approximately 17 million people out of a population of 55 million people, compared to 9.4 million people in 2004-05 and 12.4 million in 2007-08. So we do see that there's a continued effort, as it says in the Minister of Budget Policy Statement, to look at redistributive measures and to provide expenditure funding for those. However, according to Stats 6A, since 2011, we have seen poverty levels increase. And so the question is, are we keeping up expenditure and provision relative to the size and growth of the population, but also possibly declining incomes that people are facing in the economy? And also, according to Stats South Africa, there was a small decrease in the income Gini coefficient that measures inequality from 2011 to 2014. And I think it's worth remembering that, again, in the period from 2003 onwards, there was a large increase in inequality in the country linked to the growth that happened, but also linked to increased financial market activities, but that weren't associated with levels of employment increases and job opportunities. And so inequality increased during that period, and basically there wasn't a large decrease in inequality, a very slight decrease in inequality since 2011 to 2015. Unfortunately, the Stats South Africa data that we have, looking at income, Gini coefficients and measure inequality only go up to 2015, so we don't have the picture for last year. The next slide, we look at in the current period, the goal of fiscal consolidation was basically to bring down the size of the deficit, but also the levels of debt to GDP. And what we see is that the outlook for growth and revenue is currently poor. The fiscal objectives of stabilizing debt as a share of GDP over the medium term does not appear likely. A primary surplus will not be realized in 2018-19 as projected in the 2017 budget review. I government will continue to borrow to meet non-interest expenditure. And the question is fiscal consolidation still the medium-term fiscal policy objective of government? And that wasn't clear in the medium-term budget policy statement. You know, just a reminder of what happened during our pre-MPBS, MPPPS discussion of looking at the macroeconomics of the South African growth path. The PBO explained as the growth path and its impact on expected economic performance. Private consumption and investment by households and firms will remain subdued. Fiscal consolidation has had and will continue to have a downward effect on the economy and growth. This is a view supported in the 2017 MPBCS. And investment and employment growth in the public sector that has happened in the public sector over the last decade or so may enhance multiplied benefits of increased government expenditure. And I think it's also worth noting that there's a focus on investment and consumer confidence within the MPBCS. And this confidence has to be considered within the context of the macroeconomic growth path and economic structure. the household, for instance, will be less confident because of income, employment, and economic conditions are not good. But the context for this, the lack of confidence, is that economic growth path shaped by previous debt-driven consumption and growth that has been described as jobless growth and increasing inequality. And so the levels of confidence in the economy are often a factor of what has preceded it and the state of the ability of the economy to grow. It can be affected by many other factors, political instability or political events, the global economy, etc., civil unrest, national disaster. But I think confidence has to be seen in the context of global growth. So now, moving into, what are the questions about the macroeconomic approach in the 2017 medium-term budget policy statement? Now, to quote from the medium-term budget policy statement, it says, hard choices are required to return to the public finances and sustainable position. And with that, it proposes that increased effort at microeconomic interventions to stimulate the economy and improve regulation and competitiveness of manufactured exports and reindustrialization. The point that we make is that, however, the effectiveness of microeconomic interventions is likely to be severely negatively impacted by a low-growth macroeconomic environment, even if global conditions support increased exports. So if you think about, just taking an example from the top of my head, if you look at a country like India or China, where growth rates are 7 or 8% per annum, if you start a small business there versus starting a small business in South Africa, where output consumption is down and GDP growth is around about 1% and is not likely to go above 2% over the next few years, you're more likely to succeed in the high-growth country. This is the simple point. And whether you deregulate the economy, whether you say people can operate without licenses, whatever you do, the struggle for small business is going to be in the context of the growth and the opportunities and the ability then to realize profits in that low growth environment via subdued aggregate demand. We also say, sorry, I see that point being repeated in the slide. So, therefore, consolidation should be given to the impact of continued fiscal consolidation in the economy. And this is one of the big questions that we raise. So looking at fiscal consolidation over 5 years, and whether it's something to carry on. And to start looking at answering this question, we go to what's been described. Sorry, am I messing up? Okay. What's been described as one of the least controversial equations in macroeconomics, and I've actually written it out in words so it's not confusing. It says that the debt ratio next year is equal to the ratio this year, increased by the rate of interest and decreased by the rate of growth of GDP plus this year's primary deficit. So if to understand that, if you're looking at the balloon, the picture, so if you want to know what your debt ratio is going to be, you look at debt and GDP. If the interest rate increases, it's going to pull the balloon up and the debt to GDP ratio is going to increase because your debt relative to GDP is going to go up. But if the growth rate increases, it's going to pull the balloon down and your debt to GDP ratio is going to go down. And we have to then, we'll see that the denominator, GDP, in the ratio of debt to GDP is growing, therefore the debt to GDP ratio is declining. So from this, we also see that the government and its choices around spending levels, etc., is not only a choice of government and whether government can affect the growth rate, but it's also affected by the South African Reserve Bank and what happens in global bond markets in terms of the interest rates that government ends up having to pay. Now, just to repeat, the size of the interest rate and growth rate is important for understanding debt dynamics because interest rates larger than growth rates means debt will grow. So your debt to GDP levels will grow. it is increasingly agreed, and this is in the economic literature, but also in policy discussions in countries in the US, in Europe, across the world, that fiscal expansion can improve fiscal sustainability, particularly in high-debt countries. And this is because in countries where the debt ratio is high, the difference between the interest rate and GDP growth will have more influence on the size of the debt ratio. So if you think about what, whether it's your deficit and government spending, or whether it's your difference between how much you're growing and your interest rate, as your size of your debt grows, as your the relative size of your growth rate and your interest rate, that's going to start having more influence on the debt to GDP level. So this then is discussed in the context of considering whether we continue with fiscal consolidation or fiscal stimulus. Now the consideration for fiscal stimulus that we list is that government counter-cyclical fiscal policy since 2009 has only had limited impact on stimulating the economy. Net debt as a share of GDP has increased from 26.4% in 2009-10 to 35.6% in 2012-13, and today it's 47%. Consequently, our interest payments consume a larger share of our expenditure, 14% at the moment, and reducing the growth in debt stocks will therefore limit the share of value that is to debt service costs. And if you provide a healthy balance sheet to issue more debt in the future for other socio-economic objectives, for example, NHI infrastructure, so this is a case that's saying, basically, we've tried increasing expenditure relative to revenue, and we ended up with higher debt to GDP. And this is true, because what happened between 2009 and 10, our revenue levels to GDP actually declined, and it's only we actually haven't reached back to that level. This year we actually put 1% below the revenue to GDP level that we were at the time right after the crisis. But we did try to keep expenditure related to GDP growing at a slight level, and then this did increase the size of the deficit, and it did increase the size of the debt. The question is, was this counter-cyclical, and did it actually help us to deal with that problem of the crisis, rather than contribute to GDP growth, that it would reduce the debt to GDP properly? So that's, I think, the really important question, and I think that's a question that we've debated within the PBO, and that's something I think that we want to put out there. So thinking about what happened after the crisis, why government was spending, whether that was effective, and whether that created a situation where our levels of debt to GDP are not as high as they could have been, that's the counter to that argument. The consideration for fiscal stimulus comes out of that what we have seen is that GDP has been declining with more fiscal consolidation. And we will see, as the NTBPS predicts, continued low GDP growth linked to that consolidation. Also, that consolidation hasn't been associated with lower debt to GDP level, as would be expected, and as I said, that's because the revenue to GDP has been growing slowly after, say, being shocked with the global financial crisis. What we also see is that we face a situation in global markets where with the easing of quantitative easing, with the increase in possible increases in inflation and interest rates in the US and Europe, and the improvements in the economy, that we may have money moving out of emerging economies like South Africa back to the developed economies. Also, if you've been reading the news, you see there's a very high prediction within the media and the experts commenting in the media that South Africa will lose its domestic currency investment rate. And so with that, we're likely to see interest rates increase. So we're going to be in a situation where interest rates are going to be increasing and GDP likely staying low or decreasing, and this is going to contribute to the debt to GDP ratio, unless we use fiscal stimulus to try to drive growth and respond to the low growth era. And as we said in our analysis of the South African growth path, that we're not likely to see private households and private firms increasing consumption and investments, and that government may be, given the investment in skills and capital stock, may be in a good position to increase the market by effect. I think, again, referring back to countries like China and India, we saw in those countries, for India, for example, in the last 20 years, their debt-to-GDP levels have been between 60 and 80%. They've been growing around 8% per annum, and they've invested a huge amount in infrastructure. And in South Africa, if we look at the numbers put out in the 2016 budget review, the multiplier effect on the economy. So for every land you spend in construction business, in the infrastructure project, you get between 1.7 and 1.8 rand increase in GDP. And so a lot of what can happen in those countries, even though we've seen private and public sector debt rate increase, we've seen them being able to capitalize growth in GDP, and a lot of that being not only private sector driven, but being driven through public sector expenditure and growing into GDP levels. So macroeconomic measures may not be as successful with low growth and low confidence. So we're not making any proposal. We're basically giving a pro and against arguments for fiscal stimulus. And I think in South Africa, given the state or the poor state of fiscal in academia and in other places, discussing fiscal policy, the impact of fiscal policy, I think these questions are important going forward, and it may also be questions that members may want to raise with National Treasury and other experts as you go into the country itself, looking at the public hearings, etc. So I'm going to end there. Sorry, I've taken a lot of your time, and I'm going to pass that to my colleagues.
Thank you, good morning, coaches. Good morning, buddy. Good morning. Good morning, colleagues. That is a revised main budget framework as it is from the NCPS. We will look at some of the issues within each and every component of the budget framework there. I'll start with revenue. I think it was announced in the NCPS that the tax policy, which is an indicator that measures the growth of sector revenue relative to the growth of the economy, has declined significantly over the past 2 years. I think there's a number there from 1.23 to one indicator. So the indicator is 1.3. Basically, the text is buoyant at about one, an indicator of one, and the higher, the better for the text, collection of tax revenue. And obviously, the below one indicator would mean it's undesirable position to be in. The announcement in the MCPL or tax rates could simply mean that tax system effectiveness to realize tax revenue has decreased for the past 2 years. And this despite various discretionary tax changes, measures of sovereign changes for the past 2 years, which also talks to the increased marginal rate, introduction of the new tax budget and so on, despite that the tax volumes have declined. A lower than anticipated or expected tax points, or at least one, could affect expected potential revenue target collection over the medium term, and this by extension could potentially negative implications for the public finance over the medium term. Short run movement of tax points often differs in the long-term run of tax policy, and often you probably want to use the long-term run of the tax policy to have a more over the longer-term measures of the tax effectiveness in mobilizing revenue. There are various factors that affect the tax policy, which include structural issues, macroeconomic factors, institutional issues, demographic, population demographics of the taxpayers, and also the discretionary changes within the tax over the short term or long term and so on. So that could be different there could be different factors that lead to the decline of the tax buoyancy there. A decomposed tax buoyancy could also reflect different issues, the major tax instruments thereof, your PAT. There could be different factors from those major tax instruments thereof. Coming back to the point, the announcement in the MTPS led us to raise questions that Parliament might require additional information to provide further information in terms of how has the tax points movement affected tax revenue collection over time, or the recent decline, and by extension, investigation public finance. And also, has the buoyancy been affected by any social or any recent discretionary to the tax measures? And does the recent decline in tax points signal any structural issues in the tax liberalization? And how may this be dealt with over the long term? So, in a sense, Chair, what we're saying there is that you probably need more information as part of the party to understand what's happening. Because clearly, despite increasing tax rates, the tax revenue didn't perform, hasn't come to party as it was expected there. So, tax points are one of the measures that can be used to assess it. But of course, very complicated to look at. Trying to look at diving quite in detail into the estimated 2028 tax revenue shortfall. The three largest tax instruments account for 37 billion plus minus 73% of the estimated shortfall, which is your PAT, VAT, and CIT. Notably, and also the custom duty as well has also come up quite down for 5.8 billion as well, which is quite significant. Examining performance of the base of these three instruments, major tax instruments, may provide some explanations why has that happened, why has the estimated collection so low. Look at PIT, wage bill has not grown as fast as expected. That could also explain why we have lower, with estimated lower collection that component. VAT growth in household expenditure remains low, as Sergio also explained there, in part due to slow growth in wage bill, as well as the continued pay down of household debt that has been set before the fiscal crisis. And the net effect is lower, economic activity, and hence lower net increase, net intake. A slower than anticipated inflation rate is another factor that could also have affected the VAT shortfall there. CIT net operating surpluses has been marginally lower than anticipated. This is a direct result of slower than anticipated economic growth, despite an evidence of accumulating turnaround in global growth. Again, slower than expected inflation in 2017 would also have negative impact on corporate turnover and how the taxable income would be for corporate taxes there. The uncertainty around forecast shares is an important indication or consideration for fiscal planning. You know, it would not be unrealistic for government to realize a larger deficit than anticipated in the MTPS. You know, it could go higher, even higher than that. Planning for worse than expected outcomes is prudent given the tight fiscal environment we have. Currently, government has already budgeted for the additional 15 billion in tax revenue for 2018-19. Any shortfall and over the medium term will have to be funded through additional borrowing unless significant reforms are enacted to reduce expenditure and or raise further revenue there. This slide gives a possible range using our 90% confidence of outcomes of the three main assessments and gross tax revenue. The range is informed by our focus audit projects, where we look at the historical errors, financial errors on focus. For each instrument, there is a 90% probability that the final audit outcome revenue could fall within those two ranges, the sort of worst and the best ranges, and also bring up to the lower collection. Besides the possible range of outcomes, on average, after the fallout of the global financial crisis in 2019, MTPS forecasts have differed from the final outcome by KT 8.4 billion, 6.7 billion, and KT. So we use those also try to estimate the fallout, the potential range there. The next component is the debt. The net debt as a share of GDP is not likely to stabilize over the medium term. The central medium term fiscal objectives of government, as it's been explained additional risks to health and sustainable public finances posed by contingent liabilities, particularly guarantees, as we talked about that in our pre-analysis there. Over the past 5 years, government guarantees have increased by over 190% with current exposures. The share of guarantees utilized is above 65%. The increased level of exposure combined with the poor financial performance position of several tenancies and uncertainties around the independent power program has increased chance of additional guarantees being called upon and so having to step in on our commitment in guarantees. So clearly there are a lot of issues there around that and interesting. Thank you. Lilia?
Thank you. Morning. This slide is trying to illustrate or try and link policy with expenditure. So you know that Treasury categorizes the different departments with the same function into different functional groups. But the first functional group there is learning and culture. This is a new function group. Last year it was separated, higher education and basic education. Previously we had 9 function groups. Now they've combined education, basic and tertiary education, and they've also included agriculture with the economic development function group. So the first one changes over time. In 2016, 20.4% of the total budget was spent on the first function in terms of learning and culture, and it's not moving. Over the medium term, it will still stay at 20.4%. In terms of peace and security, which has now also been indicated as a priority from the mandate paper, there's a slight reduction from 2016 of 12.8% to 12.2% in 2020. The second highest function group is social development. You can see there's a slight reduction over the medium term. In 2016, we spent 15.1% of the total budget on social development, and it's decreased to 14.8%. And there's a new category, the one that you hardly can see, that is payment for financial assets. So that category will now budget for the contingent liability. So it seems that that's the category they're going to use to budget for those challenges. In terms of debt service costs, you will see that's the only one that's really increasing. In 2016, it was 10.1% of the total budget, and we estimate that we will spend 11.5% in 2020 on debt service costs. The next slide is basically the same analysis, but it's just on the economic classification. We are worried about our COE budget, but you can see on compensation of employees, government is really trying to make an effort to reduce the total proportion of expenditure on COE. And then the last category you will see, that's also the payment for financial assets. In this slide, I included the revised numbers for 2017-18, and there you will see it was 1.2% of total expenditure. And you will also see the changes that have been made in this year in the adjusted budget. In terms of the changes made, South African Airways received a combined amount of 10 billion in the adjusted budget, and that is also where you saw that small little peak in the payment for financial assets in that new functional group. post office received 7.7 billion, and then we're also establishing a Corazon Consulting Fund Trust to improve the spending on infrastructure, 117 million. And then we had unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, which were dealt with in the adjustments of 586 million. The declared unspent funds by national departments is 1.67 billion, of which compensation amounted to in communication to 4.8 million. The planning, monitoring and evaluation declared 25 million of the compensation unspent. Public Service Administration 10.5, Public Works 38, and Labour declared 10 million unspent now in their adjustment budget. Some of the capital budgets that were declared unspent is in Home Affairs 100 million, Public Works 15 million, Basic Education 415 million, Telecommunications 114 million, and Arts and Culture 90 million for capital projects. And this is also what we're trying to emphasize in terms of government underspending in capital. Declared unspent from other, which I just want to mention, is the unspending of the public works program, the community works program, which is 50 million, and that is our program that's supposed to create jobs and employment for the poor. In terms of social development, they declared unspent funds of 350 million of the social grant. The remits and shifts that were made in terms of employment, you also you will have to note that this item can only be approved by Parliament because it has been earmarked in the Appropriations Act. In terms of corporate governance and traditional affairs, public enterprises, independent police investigation directorate, small business, water and sanitation, and higher education, the in terms of the compensation to goods and services or other functions. So these are the departments that we need to look into detail whether Parliament is basically convinced that they can approve these vermins. In terms of vermins, shifts of cost containment measures, higher education shifted money to TV colleges, but they also did the shift from their compensation budget to TV colleges. So it's just proving to us that there are still departments which have a little gap of funds that they can reprioritize. It's not a problem that they send it to TV requires additional funding, but you will see because of this shift, there was a gap in higher education. The last one is one that I don't really understand. Social development shifted child support and disability grants to the write-off of social assistance debtors of 385 million. I phoned Treasury and I tried to find out the explanation for this, but I really didn't get an answer for this. So we still need to find the answer, what this actually means. Just a short indication of the division of revenue. You can see government is really trying to make an effort to shift more money to local government. In 2017-18, 9% of total expenditure went to the local government sphere, and over the medium term, there's a slight increase to 9.3%. In the NCPPS, Treasury really acknowledges the challenges that they experience in SOEs, and they acknowledge that they're really trying to make a few changes in terms of policy changes and interventions for SOEs, which is also indicated in the 14-point plan. And then something else that we also identified was in terms of the challenges of spending in infrastructure, it's not just us all that identified that challenge, but the AGI identified that in the 2016-17 budget. Treasury is basically, they're really trying to make efforts to increase the spending, and that's also been taken up in the 14-point plan. Thank you. Prof will conclude the presentation.
Chair, I think what we've done is we've indicated in this presentation, given the MTBPS that we face, is that clearly we have seen very unimpressive performance in our key macroeconomic variables. And this is the fact. This is what we indicate to the world that we've seen over the past 5 years in this regard. And this has been 5 years where we've seen fiscal consolidation taking place. And this has probably led to some of the outcomes that we've seen. We've seen poor GDP and revenue performance. And I think what we also see as a result is that the objectives that we've set out for ourselves, or that government has set out, is slipping away in this regard. The MTBPS acknowledges that, that debt has continued to increase as a share of GDP. Economic growth rates have declined. In addition to that, we've seen, as I say, we've indicated poverty increase, unemployment increase, inequality increasing as well. So the broad aspects of development, unfortunately, is also slipping away from us. The MTBPS honourable members continue to choose, I think, fiscal consolidation that we see. And I think it also urges in, now in this regard that we need microeconomic interventions to address the issues that get ourselves back onto the growth path. However, is this poor growth, low public expenditure, is it the right environment for us, you know, to kickstart microeconomic intervention? Will it kickstart the microeconomic intervention in this regard? And I think if you look at the literature, and I think my colleagues have pointed out this out here, is that it's unlikely for things to kickstart the economic growth that we want and the development that we want in this regard. So we should clearly give impact or consideration to fiscal consolidation and its impact. The tax buoyancy, I think, as Dumisani has declined, and Parliament needs to consider the tax buoyancy issue. And I think Dumisani has given a definition of what is meant by tax buoyancy. Revenue shortfall, and I think that the outcomes are still uncertain on the government. So 50 billion is what has been indicated, could be more. Highest portion of the budget has been spent on learning and the culture budget, social development is in second place. So what we see in terms of our fiscal policy is still the emphasis on trying to get growth going, but to maintain the social safety net in this regard. And this balancing act is critical as well for our consideration. There's been 1.67 billion, 2 billion almost in unspent funds. 2017-18. We've noticed that media indicated a shift in the region of revenue. And I think what all this calls for is there enough oversight to monitor the risks that we face, not only by SOEs, but within the broader economy, and the potential impacts for achieving and attaining our fiscal and monetary policy objectives. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity, members. And if there's any questions, we will. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Jahed and your team. Just quick from my side to refer to unspent funds of 1.67 billion rand. Does that include provinces as well? Because the 9 provinces returned 4.4 billion at the end of March to the National Treasury in terms of the National Treasury presentation. We received the Select Committee on Finance. Let me just clarify that for us. Thank you, all the members. Questions? Number one, number two, number three. Remember your number. Number four. Any more? None?
From Ministry number 2, Mr. Chairman, for those of you
the content of who just decides on the portion of spending, compensation, employees and so on, the transfers and subsidies, that presumably contains a huge proportion there of the compensation of employees. And is there, do you have any indication or any idea of how much is there? So we can get a big picture on that.
Thank you, Jay. On slide 5, you put a question. Is fiscal consolidation still the medium-term fiscal policy objective of government? What is the answer to that question in your view? Then in your conclusion, you say consideration should be given to the impact of continued fiscal consolidation on the economy. If I understand you correctly, the thrust of your presentation, the PDO believes that government should abandon its policy of fiscal consolidation and take on more debt in order to fund a fiscal stimulus. That seems to be the thrust of your argument. Is that the thrust of, can you confirm that that is the thrust of your argument? And I wonder if you could expand on that argument and explain exactly how, in this fiscal environment, you would achieve that goal. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Mom.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think my first one is the issue on state on companies, and I must agree that I don't think they're just boards and CEOs. What is your advice? What is your guidance? What do you believe we should do in terms of the state-owned entities? It is clear that really draining the economy, draining our fiscus in terms of the amount of money, and that you have to continue bailing them out. Could you please advise, what do you think is the way forward in terms of that? The other issue is, which I don't see too much of emphasis and I want you to comment on, is like cost containment measures. Given the fact that we have serious challenges with reduced revenue. And I'm going to give you an ideal example. If you take one particular legislature, sorry, I have to give this as an example, Chair, like the KZN. Every day that I call their members are just gone out of the country, gone all over the world. Now, I don't know, given the tight fiscal constraints in the country, should we really not be cutting down at all levels to be able to even get them? I'm just giving that one as an example. That is what we find, that we need to, you know, if you're really serious about the challenges, then maybe we need to cut down at all levels. And then you spoke about, of course, I don't want to emphasize on the challenge in terms of the debt increasing, and you can see in the last couple of years a drastic increase, and which I previously said might end up into a fiscal cliff, I don't know. But you talk about small businesses. Now, for me, it's a vicious cycle, because one, they have less of a chances of success unless you're in a country with a higher growth. However, you need the small businesses, and you need to increase the level of new businesses introducing them in order to create a economic development in the country and create jobs. So I just wanted to tell you, what do you think we... I know it's a problem, it's easier, and like you gave an example of India, there it would be here. How do we address that? Thank you.
Anyone else? Purchase, or go close up. Honorable Eshak from Pumalanga.
Great.
Chairperson, yes, thanks for the opportunity. Chairperson, I was covered by another question on the other side by Sheikh Mamba. I just want to refer the PBO to slide number 11. Now, when you look at slide number 11, regarding the tax revenue shortfalls, it is indeed not a good story to tell. So, you know, the question that comes to mind is, you know, with the contingency levels that are fast diminishing, what, and you see a worst case scenario of 69 billion rand of shortfall in revenue, worst case scenario, best case 31.7, looking at a negative figure of 50 billion. The question arises to me is, 24 months, if that long, how does the PBO see the the effect on the sovereignty of this country. That's just my question. Thanks.
Thank you. Chair, the MTBPS states that the SOEs persistently demonstrate operational inefficiencies, poor procurement practices, weak corporate governance, and failure to abide by fiduciary obligations. And what I would like to know is, has this been a consistent, this has been a consistent concern in budget documents and a concern highlighted by the presidency as well. We need to build the trust for our citizens, and kindly share your view. What can Parliament consider as recommendations on turning around the SOEs? As recommendations. So you can see how we're already looking at recommendations. All right? But then also the MTBPS states that South Africa's stated policy aspirations and its social needs far exceeds available public resources. Moreover, there is little space for tax increases in the current environment. In addition, over the next 3 years, government will adhere strictly to the spending limits it has set for itself. So in your assessment as PBO, what are those major, major areas that oversight structures, whether it's parliament, provincial or municipal council, can we really push for value for money and realize savings?
Okay.
Maybe one piece of information for committee members. The FFC was supposed to come today as well, you recall. Alan and Tebomo tell me that they couldn't come because they've got some provincial visits that they've pre-planned. But more importantly, and I think this is something that we have hinted at for finance, they will be appearing before your committee, appropriation. So, yeah, we can maybe send some members there, but I'm not sure when they'll appear. Just to let you know, I'm trying to suggest that the 3 hours allocated for two structures, it doesn't necessarily follow that because we have one structure, we have to sit here till 13:00. However, the committee is keen to do so. I should remind NC study group members, we've got a third finance members, we've got a 13:00 study group meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Darren, you will take note of that. FFC meeting with the Standing Committee of Appropriations, that also invites the finance family, the two committees in finance. It's also important, honourable members, that we recognize the economic growth of our metrics, which is higher than the national growth rate. I'm saying this because of our visits to the metros. That was very interesting to look at that. Maybe you can make a comment on that as well. Prof, over to you. Are there any other questions? None? Prof, you can reply.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members. And I'm happy to answer the questions, Chair. Not necessarily to make recommendations, but I also think I'm happy to engage in discussion with the team in this regard, the team here, on the issues that have been raised and asked. So I think we need to engage in this debate instead of me just sitting here and the team giving you the answer. So I think in terms of the debate that we'd like to, that I'd like to kickstart with, and I think the important point made by Honourable Mayne is fiscal consolidation or getting rid of it, is at the thrust of the presentation. And what I'm telling you in this regard is, in terms of our analysis, what we've indicated to you is that fiscal consolidation does not seem to have worked in this regard. So what we're saying is there's an alternative view, an alternative discussion in economics about fiscal consolidation or not in this regard, honourable members. I think it's important that we engage in this debate to say, you know, so far government has followed fiscal consolidation as a path.
there's also been counter-cyclicality before that, which means we spent our way out of trouble. Since that process, fiscal policy, and remember, colleagues, honorable members, fiscal policy in South Africa has taken two approaches. On the one hand, it's been about growth and getting growth going. On the other hand, it's about maintaining a very strong social safety net in South Africa. 70 million people on social grants, the biggest of which I think is pensions, child grants, etc. So this has been the kind of fiscal trajectory that we face. In this process as well, honorable members, we've tried to limit government expenditure. And what we've said in the earlier days is when we started, I think 94, even before, it was about the Keynesian concept of spending your way out of trouble, counter-cyclicality. What we've then seen, I think, since Honorable Nene became Minister of Finance, if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me, has been the fiscal consolidation approach. And I think it's carried on with Honorable Minister Gordon in this regard. And I think at that stage, the South African economy saw a bit of growth. We saw a bit of, you know, addressing the debt issues. Recovery was good. However, the last 5 years, and this is the fact, this is not, you know, what I'm speaking of, is that fiscal consolidation has led us to the situation in the district. No growth, revenue, degeneration, unemployment, etc., etc. And the question we pose in this regard, given the literature that you see and lessons of experience and some of the country analysis, is this still the right trajectory in this regard? And we're highlighting this debate to you. And as you know, economics is a very fickle profession. There's a lot of studies which have indicated that we need to move away from fiscal consolidation. There's equally lots of studies which show less maintain in this regard. There's also been a new process of budgeting, honorable members. Because budget reform is also a critical process in this whole regard. The old form of budgeting was if you make 100 rand, you spend 100 rand. Nowadays, I think if we look at debt levels in highly developed economies, and I think we're looking at 60% plus, what you receive is not exactly what you spend. You can actually leverage a bit more, depending on, you know, what your needs are. So we're raising the debate with you one more minute, you know, as our principles. Is this still the right trajectory? Do we continue with this or not? And we've raised some of the issues for you to consider in this regard. So, that would be the one response. Siraj and Dumisa, I think, can answer well going forward. I think the issue with SOEs, honorable members, and I must raise it because you seem to raise the same issues all the time. The same question, you know. Is the question about state-owned enterprises is where it starts with this regard. What was the reason for introducing SOEs? In a lot of countries, SOEs are there to address the market failure. So for example, you had the DBSA, the market would not fund infrastructure projects, finance sectors. So you introduced the DBSA and they provided infrastructure at cheap interest rates, etc. Now, after years of investing in infrastructure, the banks see the benefits of getting involved in infrastructure. Does that mean DBSA continues, you know, as an SOE? It has addressed the market failure. Or, you know, does it move on to doing something else? And I think this is the issue you need to ask with SOEs. Of course, we understand there is governance failures, there's management issues, there's lack of capacity. But the fundamental question is, what is your purpose in this regard? And how do you drive this purpose on the project? You know, if you believe that SOEs address a market failure or not. I think those are the issues you need to ask in this regard. And I think this debate that we're having is necessary. You know, we need to engage in these debates instead of, you know, both being ideologically blind about what the issues are and what we put out there, whether it's supply side policies or demand side policies. But the debate is important here. Shall I hand over to Siraj and then Dumisa and Julia too? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Just on the question by Honorable Mayor, I think just to be clear, we're not stating a position. we're reflecting the terms of the debate. And this is an international debate that I think people should be very clear about. A lot of what has happened in countries like Europe, within Europe, with the European Union and ECB, and what's happened in the US has been monetary stimulus and basically quantitative easing. At the same time, there was a lot of fiscal stimulus, especially in the period after the crisis, and the interesting cases, I think I said that in last year's MPPPS as well, to look at and how it was done. And with quantitative easing, we've seen trillions of US dollars enter into bond markets, into equity markets, etc., buying up, basically increasing the debt or the balance sheet of central banks to increase liquidity into the global market as a way to ease the effect of the global financial crisis on those countries. So basically, there are two sides to macro policy. So one is taken by a central bank, which are state entities. The other is taken by your treasury, which is often on the fiscal side. And there were interventions on both sides. The major interventions were on the monetary side in those kinds of countries. But there were actually increases in debt and increases in fiscal stimulus as well. And the debate within the macroeconomic profession today, especially as the limits of quantitative easing is being reached, as you get zero interest rates, and in countries like Japan, the short-term interest rate is now -1% nominal. I mean, we've seen since the crisis many of these countries maintaining real negative interest rates. And as you reach the limit of that, mainstream economists, people, if you look at the Jackson Hole conference where the chairs of central banks from all around the world and some of the top mainstream academics come together every year, one of the main debates was what can we do with fiscal policy, how the approach change can be used. And I think it would be remiss of us in the PDO not to bring those debates. And so it may seem as if we're coming with something new, as we're trying to push a position. What we are trying to do is to say that the thinking about fiscal policy and what you can do with it has changed within the mainstream. People advising government officials, President Obama's previous head of Council of Economic Advisors, the current people advising President Trump, what's happening within the ECB, these are the kind of people actually saying the approach to fiscal policy has changed. Fiscal policy can be used to stimulate the economy. The costs that we thought as mainstream economists that were associated with it are not as high as previously thought. In fact, many of them pay for themselves because of the growth in GDP, brings down the debt level to GDP. And what they are saying is it's also in a situation where you're coming out of a crisis or where you're in a situation of low growth or recession that actually clouds in private sector investment. And so this isn't just an argument that people in developing countries use about how you develop the economy and that the state can drive a certain and capitalize growth. It's actually the way in which the world and economies in developed and developing countries have been thinking about the way out. Sorry, I don't want to go too much into an economic lecture, I apologize, but I think so we're not pushing a position. We're not saying that, but we actually are saying that this is a discussion happening everywhere, and that we should consider it, and we should consider it in the context of monetary and fiscal policy, and both have an impact, as I said, on your debt to GDP level and what you do. The other point about small business and promoting small business, which I think has come up from two honorable members, is that, you know, what we think is that we should always be improving conditions at the microeconomic level, irrespective of what growth is, whether it's high growth or low growth. We're not saying that we need to curb those. We actually think that it's important to create conditions to support small business for employment creation, for improving incomes in poorer and middle class households, etc. There's a huge benefit for the economy if we can grow that. We do know that the failure rates of new small businesses are very high, but that failure rate declines as you get higher levels of GDP, because it just becomes the market conditions are easier. So there are things that governments can do in a low growth environment that can support small business, even if they would be struggling with realizing profits. So improving infrastructure, improving access to markets, reducing, having possibly, actually maybe I shouldn't talk about taxes, but we'll talk about that clearly. But there's several things that we've done it in South Africa, but we can learn from other countries. But so microeconomic interventions are really important. The question that we're raising is that are microeconomic interventions alone enough to spur the growth? And within the environment of low growth and that fiscal consolidation has been seen as contributing to the low growth environment, that is something to think about. On the state-owned enterprise, just to continue the issue of the broader context. I mean, I think a lot of distraction and vital distraction has been on issues of governance, how well they run, waste, etc. And those are really important to solve. But I think the role that SOEs play is also affected by levels of growth. I mean, if you look at ISCOM came up like everybody else, predicting a certain level of growth and then having to follow the estimates downwards. And with that, they estimated certain demand, and now we're finding that they're going to come in at under demand. Now, that may be linked to governance problems and other problems, and I'm not going to make a judgment on that, but that is also a problem that is that everybody else faces. And so, can we fix ISCOM to give us the kind of balance sheet and income revenues that were expected irrespective of that situation? And then how do we deal with that? And I think that's one of the big issues that members of parliament face going forward in terms of thinking about oversight, but also understanding how the environment affects SOEs and their performance. But again, like small business, we're not saying that you don't fix the governance issue. I mean, the governance issues are fundamental. The last thing my colleague Musani will probably say more later is that the issues of tax buoyancy, I think, is something that we need to really understand more. And I think starting from National Treasury as to other research organizations and ourselves, it's probably something that we need to think about and think about what's driving it. I think we've had discussions in the office, and I think people are pointing to really interesting phenomena, but what's really scary is that the MPDPS is talking about this fundamental shift in tax buoyancy, which means that if we are collecting less relative to GDP, we may have to look at supplementing our revenue to make up for that difference.
And you must share that thought with us as well. We had to have that discussion. Can you hear it? The other point that came out here from the tables is the different scenarios. If you look at Brazil, if you look at Russia, if you look at Malaysia, Singapore, what do they do? We are questioning the whole question of fiscal consolidation, but what other models are there to look at? Maybe a comparative study. Masami?
Thank you. I think what we'll do, we'll try to prepare some analysis to give that scenario, different scenario on fiscal consolidation in different countries' situation. We'll do that. Thank you. I think the director and the large cover quite a lot. In a sense, you know, the economies are growing, and the revenue machine is not functioning well, you're going to have a shortfall of it. If the economy is not growing and the revenue collection machine is not functioning well, you're likely to have a shortfall, and it's getting that. I think that's what I'm trying to say. The one internet question, I wanted to just add on the state-owned entity. I think the slides that we have with state-owned entity there, if you agree that you need to have, also Director was saying, the discussion you should have, and probably you need to have a long-term view. I mean, the point that we're saying on the slides there, what you say, you know, the Presidential Review Committee in 2012, there's a little report. We did some work as well on that for finance and state on public enterprise committee. But I think the main issues is around the commercial mandate and development mandate and blah, blah, and so on. But I think the point there is that if you agree on this, but that part, you probably need to have a long-term view, because if you have, if you're going to say the state-owned entity is important for development mandate, then there would be expectation that the fiscal should have to come into that space a lot than when you have a private entity. So if you agree or disagree on that aspect, then you've got to take a long-term view in terms of your fiscal, the role of fiscals in that space of the SOE. And I think that's a bigger question that you need to be addressed, because there's this fatigue, I use the word fatigue in a very loose way. There's people saying there's a contingency being driven away or being used up and so on, but you know that this is the question. Do you need to have that SOE? And if you say yes or no, what is the implication for fiscals on that? But I think one of the points that came out from the PRC as well is that you probably need to cost that developmental mandate, whatever that means. You need to cost it and say, okay, this is how much fiscals will come in over the long term. And one of the things that came out from the energy field, which is quite also useful for oversight, primary oversight, is the conditions that we start to put in this cash injection to say, you probably need to have that monitoring mechanism as parliament to say, what are these conditions? Have these conditions been met before or subsequent to that process? I think that's what I want to add on the SOE, or any parliament's oversight. Value for money expenditure. I mean, look, I think the next slide, on capital infrastructure and so on, there's certainly broader expectations from the discussion that spending on infrastructure or capital assets, I was calling capital assets, whatever, it has a broader multiplier effect on the economy. And if government estimates spends an amount of money in that space and doesn't get spent, you start asking yourself what would have been the implications for the economy. So the point there, Chair, is what is happening in infrastructure expenditure? Certainly you need to know what's going on. If we agree that infrastructure expenditure has a multiplier effect on and we keep on reallocating funds from this. Of course, I mean, last week in our pre-discussion, we emphasized that there are complications around the area. I mean, I'll give an example, where I had a discussion of the departments in the Northwest, and the guy said, if you give me, allocate this money for next 3 years to spend on the project, why do you come after a year and say, I've underspent if the project, to start the project from the ground, takes a longer time, by the time the year ends, I've not even moved. So what are the planning thinking around that aspect? To a point where, you know, at times, if you say, I should have smaller businesses, some of the smaller businesses have money to start. I'm going to give them advance, but I need to check whether they're actually developing, or I will buy them the supplies and make sure that they actually deliver, whatever. So, the Chair, what I'm saying there is there's a lot of thinking that's happening in this region. There's a multiplier effect to the economy. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Honourable Gabir. That understanding doesn't include provinces, it's only on the national level. Public works underspent, it was for the Prestige Accommodation Project and it was just national public works. And transfers and subsidies, the amount for this year's more than 500 billion that we transfer, but that's consolidated. So all spheres of government. Yes, those are the three expenditure questions. Thanks.
Sorry, just quickly, I forgot to respond to your question, Honourable Gabir, on the difference between metro growth rates and the national. I mean, what we're seeing is that just at a kind of almost technical level, many of the head offices of companies would be based in Johannesburg, including mining companies. But the mines would be in the other provinces or in other cities.
And the company cars as well, and they're taking the license fees.
Yes. So you'd see Joburg Johannesburg's growth rate would be higher based on them reflecting the value added that occurs in other centers, but also we've had a large shift from rural to urban, which means that the metro growth rates are higher just because there are more people, more spending power, and obviously the infrastructure and the density in those areas means that. And so the national GDP reflects the combination of everybody and what's happening within those metros or even within those provinces is affecting those specific situations within those provinces. I don't think that's enough of an answer to your question.
To Esther and Yolanda, the research documents you prepared for our oversight visits to the metros, can you circulate that to the other members of the Standing and Standing Committee of Appropriations and Finance, please, that they get that picture as well? Any more questions? Brent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Fiscal consolidation is a fancy economic term for tightening the belt and spending less. What's the opposite for spending more? Fiscal spendthrift, or I'm sure you'll give me a term for that. But all spending is not equal, I think you'll agree. So if the opposite to fiscal consolidation has been debated worldwide and has been used with some success by countries that don't have nuclear weapons as well, surely if we were to go this approach, where would we have to spend this money? Obviously, would it be on payroll? It would probably be more on infrastructure and certain things. Surely we wouldn't want to just give a blanket encouragement to spend more because we'll see it spent in the wrong places. So where specifically would we want to spend this money that would give us longer term GDP prospects?
Okay, I think in the presentation it was clear that the introduction of the fiscal consolidation has had an impact on the economic growth. Now also, in your response to the question raised about your fiscal consultation, you said you must do away with it. So in the past 5 years, there was economic growth, but now that has slowed down. Now, Prof, what do you think would be an alternative if we move away from the fiscal consolidation? What would be an alternative that will stimulate economic growth? Because presently there's a dire need for your inclusive growth.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this is a very good discussion. And as Parliament, we need to actually discuss the thing as Prof has suggested. But where we are is that I don't know of any empirical evidence in any economy that has shown that belt tightening does help. Because when the economy is not growing, it means private sector is not investing. Government must invest. Austerity measures have not worked anyway. But where I want to come in, I want to say that we should also look and discuss the PSLA as our framework. Does it give us as Parliament enough critique on where the money has been spent? Because spending is okay, but how has it been spent? I think as Parliament we should actually go in that space. How has the spend actually helped us? Did it achieve the envisaged result? The question of pensions, I think and grant. I think the Helen Sussman Foundation has made a study on that one. And they have said that actually the livelihood of South Africans has improved, which is a positive. And the life expectation of South Africans has improved because of that. And actually, the pensioners, when they get their money, they spend. They are not like the top 10 who always invest. Because they get the money and they invest. It's not coming back into the economy to assist us. But the pensioners get their money and they spend. So I think we need to actually engage thoroughly on that debate. But how the money was spent is the big question. For instance, in the treasury itself, 4.3 billion was spent on this infrastructure framework. It just went down the drain. We need to examine such things. And I don't think we as Parliament we've done a thorough investigation on that issue. We didn't follow it up to say, has that reckless spending stopped as we're speaking? We only heard that people have been changed from their posts.
Okay. I think if I leave this one out, I'd be missing an opportunity. So I really would like to ask this question. It's on the gross national debt, which is projected at growing at over 60% of the GDP by 2022, with debt service costs reaching 15% of main budget revenue by 2021. Our concern as the committee or as parliament is that the borrowing requirement soars even without some of the government's more ambitious programs fully included in the figures, such as your accelerated land reform, your NHI, higher education, and major infrastructure projects. Is this sustainable? And then the last one is, indeed, the MPBBS states that many departments are already at risk of exceeding their budget limit. Am I right? Am I quoting MPBBS? Yeah, correctly, yes. Now, even assuming that personnel numbers do not increase, again, in our oversight role as Parliament, we want to you to advise us on, in our intervention on when we process the MPBBS, which departments would you say they are at high risk so that we prioritize those in our work? At high risk, so that we use those. Just as a last question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question on slide 13. We talk about the total consolidated spending per function group over the medium term. And my question here is this, that, you know, given the fact that we just had the crime steps the other day, and it's really serious challenge in terms of it, and I know the Minister has spoken about some measures he wants to put in place, taking that into consideration together with every single department or provincial department of health, said to us that they are under budgeting by at least 2 billion rand. Now if you take that, and I noticed here in terms of this that we are either stagnant or we are decreasing their spending for each one of them, including economic development, what impact is this really going to have on the economy? If we're going to be stagnant or reducing, but the challenges seem to be increasing on a daily basis. If you could just comment on that.
Any other member posing a question? None? Prof, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And again, Chair, let me say, I see this as a debate. you with the utmost respect to all the members. I'd also like you to show your hand in this whole discussion and debate instead of questioning me all the time. What is your view on expansion? You know, what is your view? I told you that fiscal consolidation is a problem or that it is. What do you think about it? Why don't you show your hand in this discussion going forward? I can give, there's a lot of answers. I might give a personal view which you might not like. And I don't think that's the aim. But what I'd like to say, what is the discussion that we are about here? And let's take your question, Honourable Chair Porter. What is the alternative to fiscal consolidation? The alternative is to ensure that, you know, we get investment going, we get spending going, that we spend in the right areas, that we look at, you know, the appropriate areas, Honourable Chair. And that would be the alternative. You know, how we spend in terms of policy would be, of course, your guidance in this respect going forward. I don't think it should be an ideological discussion, you know, is it new kind of reason or is it social? I think what is the right policy approach to South Africa should be the question. Instead of you taking the interest in me in terms, you know, as if I'm your professor of economics, and, what is your view in this regard?
We are fortunate to have the professor.
I think the question raised by Honourable Shoki Sitori is the right question. For South Africa, I think we've had the MTBF, the PFMA, since 94, if I'm not mistaken. We're the only country in the world, Chair, where we tell people before they even start that they're crooks, you know, that in terms of the PFMA. Honestly, you know, so be careful about how you spend. And what happens is that managers in the civil service become managers of budgets. And they get a 2 million rand budget. They make sure that they spend it. We don't steal. We make sure it's spent. And now we go to the boss and we say, I've done my job. You know, so I need a promotion. So the budget even becomes an evaluated methodology. There's no initiative, etc. So the question is right, Honourable Shoki Sitori. Isn't it time now for budget reform? You know, shouldn't we start looking at how the budget is presented? The budget tells us nothing about what projects, who spend, who the beneficiaries are, what employment, etc., etc. So shouldn't it be time that we look at budget reform as well? Going with budget reform should be the issue of reform of the public sector. You can't just spend without having the right people in place, the right skills in place. So these are the questions we need to interrogate and ask ourselves at the broad macro level. The other issue is, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Shoki Sitori made me think of this. What is the framework for resource allocation in South Africa? You know, do we just sit there and suck thumbs and say each department gets this, you get 50 million? What's the scientific evaluation methodology for allocating resources in this country? Nothing. No one's explained that to me yet, and I've asked the questions to my students even lots of times. But no one can tell me, you know, this is, you know, are you using rational choice theory, or is it based on financial efficiency? It seems like it's just sucked up and chucked around. You know. So I think these are the broad issues that you raise on what you're talking about in this regard. I don't think you can move ahead and introduce new ideas and new policies. We don't look at what's happening in the international economic environment. And we don't look at best practices, lessons of experience. I think policy-based evidence is the issue that we need to look at. So, thank you, Chair. I think I'm going to ask Siraj and then Lydia.
So, I'm going to be quick. Just Honourable Cotton's question about belt tightening and spending and not all spending is equal. I think that's absolutely correct. You know, it's not about just making a decision that government expenditure will increase. If you make that kind of decision, if you're bold enough, because just to get back, take a step back, you know, there are huge risks. And I think that's part of the difficulty of your job, is to assess the risk and make a decision. And if you're in the private sector and you've got a good business and it's growing a bit, and you think I can expand, when you take money out of that business and put it into investment, it's a huge risk because the new project may not work and you may have a less of a business that you had started with. And I think in government we need to also have that kind of thinking. You know, when you make a decision, especially in an environment like this, it's a very risky decision. But the question then is, you know, how do we want to see going forward and how are we planning? And so things like what is going to work, are we going to be able to work with the private sector? Are we going to support their investments? Are we going to be supporting the poorest household consumption? Are we going to support job creation that will actually then spur increased agri demand, not necessarily in terms of different consumption, but actually that will then also drive local businesses and sort of the non-tradable sector in terms of services and things to households. And I think what we see around the world is that infrastructure expenditure has been a big one. And I think, again, your choices of infrastructure expenditure, ones that support job creation, ones that are less capital intensive possibly, ones that are less providing for things that we've got already, like electricity, those kinds of expenditures targeted. And I think your treasury and other people need to come to you, your other departments, and we've heard about this ministerial department committee that may be set up. They need to bring to you what are the best ways to take the economy forward and where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. And we can use things like multipliers, we can look at simulations and models and say different kinds of targeted interventions will get different kinds of returns and we can make a choice. But it has to be an important issue. Thank you.
If I may chair on honorable Topham's question and the issue that and this is a typical economic debate. 5 years ago the World Bank put out a report, I think, which indicated that infrastructure investment didn't really lead to economic growth. That it took a long time, that there were long lags, etc., etc., and that the benefits were actually, by the time it came out, were perceived to be less in that regard. So again, we have this kind of debate, you know, is infrastructure investment even the right place to go to, is the issue that you know, we should ask. The point that Honorable Shawkes is talking about is again a lot of debate about whether social crime leads to economic development. And there's a lot of studies which have indicated, including the one you quote, which has, you know, led to some economic impact. There's a lot of studies which also say that it leads to dependency, or has led to dependency in certain countries. So again, you know, what is the right approach to South Africa in this regard? And how do we take that process forward? So we need to think about these things very carefully on the ground.
Honorable Chapinoff, in terms of the slide on the proportion spending, you can see in this slide you always argue that there must be winners and losers. But you'll see the biggest winner always is at this stage the debt service cost. So it must come from somewhere. So you give and take all those trade-offs. But it doesn't mean that expenditure in terms of the different departments didn't grow. There's still the total growth in expenditure over the medium term is still 7.3 total spending, but it's just in terms of the competition. And I think Honorable thinking pulls up on some of the risk departments that are risk to identify the risk. In the pre-interview, I've identified a few, but after the adjustments, there's also a few that are definitely, and we can have a discussion about those departments that are risky.
Just to counter the earlier assertion by my honorable member here, who said original, we are all original.
Thank you. It looks like we exhausted the questions. Honourable members, I want to sensitize you to also look at two other reports. The one is from the South African Institute for Civil Engineers, when it comes to the maintenance of infrastructure. The interesting point they made. To get the infrastructure economy mobile, we need senior technical people in the space of decision making so that the rollout can actually happen. Fewer professionals means less monitoring and more overspending. Yes, we experienced that in one of the metros, at one of the metros we visited quite recently. And then the other report is the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that made an analysis of South Africa. And the big word written over the report is we need more skills. That's it. Although Karim, on the portion of the
there's a member of the committee who also forwarded a question to you. I haven't had you responding to that question. Question on the wage deal.
The question was actually asking also for recommendations and what can we do to reduce the wage bill. But in terms of this analysis that we did, so compensation of employees is actually going to be reduced in terms of the proportion spent on compensation. But the only other reason we spoke about it in the office is basically a rationalization in terms of within departments, but also within the macro picture of departments. There are a few things that you can look at. You can even look at performance management policies if you want to reduce the wage bill. But Honourable De Beer also mentioned that there's a lot of vacant positions, high-level vacant positions. So those positions need to be filled because they are urgent.
Expertise.
Yeah, expertise positions that need to be filled. So there are a few things that you can recommend, but I think that's further discussions or further research we can do in terms of the CLE budget.
On the green, we'll wrap up.
Useful to have a discussion, you know, because I'm not sure what views are, even if you're not a technically competent viewer. But we should also guard colleagues against converting our meeting into a philosophy seminar. We do need answers. So there are three new issues that have arisen as I see it. Like one, budget reform. So can't you do a simple one page on what concrete issues relate to budget reform? What are the experts talking about? Simple, plain, you know, like a user-friendly, the biggest word shouldn't be more than five letters if I had my own way. That's sort of simple thing. Two, if you are asking whether, you know, you're saying there are alternatives to fiscal consolidation. Well, as Honourable Comrade Pinky concretely, what are the alternatives? What simply clearly are the alternatives? We can do it in one thing. Without clear answers, it's possible in the future when we raise this challenging issue. It's simple, straightforward. The alternatives are A, B, C, D. And I'll explain what each D line or five line. So that we know where this thing is going. Then you say, does infrastructure lead to economic growth, investment in infrastructure? And you raise the question. So again, can't you just say, simply, what are some of the critiques of infrastructure-led growth? Because, you know, saying in whatever language, that's different. But, you know, we live in time in the game. Okay, then the other quick thing is, in the afternoon for a meeting, I'm going to say just indulging. If you look at the program, I think it's in your presence, and I hope your disciple as well. The NPOPG writer came to me and said, look, if we process the tax bills late, they will not be able to finish this year. And actually, we have finished the bills informally. And I'm told that in our other countries, it was much faster to process. Right?
So I won't come to the meeting. We can vote on it. So we bring it forward. And what we're proposing instead on the 8th is to move, I've spoken to Comrade Joe. She's out of the country. And she said it's fine, Alan, we will then swap around. So on the 8th, we won't have the financial sector transformation finalization. We will have the tax vote. And then on the 15th, we will have the fund. It also means that those of us burdened with the responsibility to pull the report together and join with me to get a bit more time. Then we meet tomorrow as the finance committee to remind you. Finance committee on the public hearing. Sorry? In the older time. So thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. That concludes the business of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
If you study good business, please remain in the finance side. Please remain behind.
I'm too late.